Works for me.
So if we go down a well that or a path that you don't want to take, feel free to change the direction if you want to.
Well, you're very kind. But I have to tell you, Candace, no one's discovered that well or path yet. There's nothing. There's nothing I don't feel comfortable talking about. And
is it because you're a comedian? All right, let's go. Don't tell me that. Don't answer that. Okay, we're going to go. Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building lasting, genuine relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. I'm your host, Candace Rodarte, and today I'm joined by Larry Wilson. Larry is an Emmy-nominated performer, producer, writer, and the 2017 Comedy Magician of the Year. With his extensive experience in show business, Larry has developed the Wilson Method, a potent training system that combines his expertise and insights. Larry offers a fresh perspective on success, attracting attention with his unique approach. He is eager to discuss communication techniques that can be employed by anyone to enhance their opportunities for gratitude. Larry's Wilson Method is a culmination of techniques he acquired by collaborating with renowned celebrities whom he considers master communicators, individuals who effortlessly achieve prosperity, joy, and abundance in life. Welcome, Larry. This is going to be a fantastic conversation, but before we get into it, we need to hear your story. So tell us your story. How did you get to where you are today?
Well, before I get into my story, I just want to say how pleased I am to be here with you, Candace, because I feel like your podcast is so congruent with what I do. I feel like you already are on that pathway that I espouse, and it feels like a perfect match. And now I'll tell you my story. And at the end of the hour, we'll see whether my prediction was correct or not. My story is peculiar, maybe because it's not filled with the Sturm und Drang. You know, there's not a lot of suffering in it. You know, if I were to jump around in the story, my whole adult life, I've been in entertainment. I've been on television, in film, on stage, biggest stages in Las Vegas, Lake Tahoe, Atlantic City, that sort of thing, working with the biggest entertainers in the world. But I didn't really dream of doing that. That was not really, I mean, so many things in my life, I seem to have backed into or fallen into. I grew up in a lovely family, mother and father who were both very loving parents, very nice. My father was a very esteemed psychoanalyst, and he was a very nice person, but I think he was kind of broken. I don't know why, really, but I mean, at this late date, I can see certain things, maybe his family and his upbringing, but he had real trouble connecting with people. Now, you would think that would be a bad thing for psychoanalysts, but actually, I think it made him an incredibly effective psychoanalyst because he did not get emotionally involved. He'd be listening sometimes to horror stories from people of trauma and abuse and terrible things that happened to them. And he was not connected on a emotional level with them. And it's funny because I've heard doctors, surgeons talk about how the best surgeons are that same way. And sometimes patients are put off by that. They think, oh, God, this didn't care how I felt. No, they're just there to do a job. And if they get emotionally involved, now it makes them less effective. I met many people growing up when I was an adult, who had been patients of my father's, who said that he saved their lives and they had profound experiences with him. So obviously he was very, very good. He was a brilliant man, but just wasn't able to connect. And as a child, it made me feel invisible. Have you ever felt that way, Candace?
Oh, yeah.
It's a bad feeling.
It doesn't feel good.
And I didn't feel like I was being ignored. I just felt like he couldn't see me. I won't belabor the point with all kinds of comic, tragic episodes, but I can just think of I felt like he didn't hear me. I would want to talk with him about something that I thought was so important, some monster movie I saw or something. And I could see that he was like not really hearing me. And so I found myself drawn to people who were able to connect with other people. And I found that in entertainment. I found, I'll tell you this, it sounds like I'm making this up, but I swear by all things that are holy, I am not making. When I was little, I couldn't, maybe 4 years old, maybe 5 years old, I remember watching The Wizard of Oz, the movie The Wizard of Oz. For some of your younger listeners, they may not know that in the days before computers and streaming, this was a big deal that they used to air The Wizard of Oz every year on television. It was a very big deal. I remember as a little kid seeing that movie for the first time. And the character of the wizard at the end of the movie where he's revealed there is no wizard. And they're so upset. And Dorothy says, you're a bad man. And he says, no, I'm a very good man. I'm just a very bad wizard. And then he proceeds to help each one of them with their problem, just with the language that he used. You think because you run from danger, you have no courage. Well, back home where I come from, there are men who take their courage out of mothballs. As a little tiny kid, I remember seeing that scene and thinking, my real father, honest to God, I thought, this is who my real father should have been. Someone who understood how to connect with all these people just with the language that he used. And as I grew older, I was drawn more and more to people in entertainment. And I would presume it's because I saw how effortlessly they would meet strangers and instantly create bonds with them. And I grew up and followed this pathway and became an entertainer. And it can't be a coincidence, I think, that I became a wizard and rapidly became very successful as a comedian magician, traveling all over the world and doing all this stuff. But I started to notice that all these superstars, people I was working with who had multiple Academy Awards sitting on their mantelpieces, people who were having me into their homes to have meals with their family and stuff, you know, and travel with them, they all seemed to have certain things in common. And of course, what they had were their communication techniques. They got everything they wanted. They got relationships. They got businesses. They got deals. Whatever they wanted, they got. And it seemed to be because of the way they communicated. And so I would sometimes it was clear that they were just working on instinct. There were some of them I knew who I would ask them and they wouldn't know what I was talking about. So I would sort of model what they were doing. But there were some of them who were very conscious of what they were doing. And I would say, hey, I just saw you talking to this person. You did this thing. How did you do that? And they go, oh, and they break it down and show me step by step how to do it. And I thought, well, this is incredible, because what I began to see now, I like to present myself as a genius, Candace. Unfortunately, I'm not really a genius. I'm just a regular guy. But it took me many years before I figured out that the great news about all this was it's all technique, that it wasn't about having talent, because that would be bad news. I don't know how to teach anyone to be talented, but technique is transferable. Technique is duplicatable. You know, it's like a hitting a golf ball or making an omelet or changing oil in a car. You know, if a master teaches you how to do this and you do it repeatedly, consistently, you'll become a master. It's not mysterious, you know? And so that really is the origin of this whole Wilson method training. It is the distillation of my entire life, really, in show business, and these extraordinary techniques I learned from these people who I really think are the best communicators in the world.
Wow. Better than politicians, obviously.
Oh, my God. You know, here's the problem with Wilson method. People who've trained with me have So many of my students are referrals from other students because people have trained me. One, people around them see them functioning at a much higher level, getting more done, more successful in business, in their personal lives, all kinds of things. And they say, how are you doing? They go and they explain. But also because so many of my people who've trained with me will then go to other people and say, you know what, contact Larry. You know, I do 2-day boot camps, and I call them boot camps because I, instead of me just yapping at you, I actually make you get up and do the things that you're learning so that it's imprinted on you, so that you really learn it. And I limit the boot camps to just 10 people so that they're...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, very, very immersive. And you can't help but come out of that operating at a much, much higher level. So I say this only because the people who train with me sometimes will complain later that now they're sensitized to seeing things they didn't know about before.
Mm.
The one thing they all talk about, well, there's two things. One is commercials. They'll all comment on commercials because they're seeing them through a different lens now, and they're listening to the language. But politics, they all comment, they can't bear to listen to people giving political speeches because they think this person should have gone with Larry Wilson and learned how to communicate because these politicians, oh my God, Candace, I know you wouldn't have mentioned it, but they, I try to be very impartial about these things. I never discuss things like politics or religion. I feel that it's personal stuff and it's no one's business.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you this. I have a collection of sound bites of various politicians that I keep really for instruction in my training. And it's all parties. It's Democrats, it's Republicans, it's independents, where they're... You can listen to it and you realize this person didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
They used a bunch of words, or worse, you know, I may be already getting far afield. You stop me, Candace, if I get too out of control here. In Wilson Method, I talk about 3 D's, and I want you to use it as a touchstone if you get lost in the training, because we think of 3D, you know, three-dimensional.
I like that.
Well, the 3 D's, you know, that's a mnemonic device to be able to remember. Oh, wait, what was Larry? Oh, yeah, 3D, live in 3D, right? Well, the 3 D's are determine, define, and deploy. And I want you to determine your goal in communication before you begin. It seems so obvious, seems like everything I teach, everything in Wilson Method is so simple. Anyone can do it. If you speak English well enough to understand what I'm saying, then I can teach anyone to become a master communicator. It's not difficult at all. But that simple idea of determining your goal before you begin really is the difference between success and failure.
Well, that's true for communication. It's true for marketing. It's true for business strategy. It's true for relationships. It's Absolutely. True for everything. You have to determine what the end is going to be. And sometimes, right. sometimes it doesn't have to be like a specific end, but the goal is to do X, right? And sometimes X looks different for different people, or it looks different than you originally thought it was going to look, but it's still X.
Absolutely. And you know, sometimes it may change. You may start out with this goal and then somewhere along the line, it may transform to something else. That's also fine too. But it is alarming because this may be an interesting thing for your listeners. If they just turn on any news radio channel and listen to any politician, they'll hear these people shooting from the hip. This is not a good idea. It is an indication of hubris on the part of the speaker. There's a lot of politicians who think they're the smartest person in the room. I can say without fear of contradiction, they are never the smartest person in the room.
And they never listen to the smartest person in the room either.
Oh, well, why would you listen to anyone else if you're the smartest person? Right? And that it's so clearly, I talk a lot in Wilson Method about semiotics, about the science of signaling information that is not spoken. And so much of the information we get in exchange is semiotic. It's in facial affect. It's in our breathing. It's in our posture, in eye contact, in our whether we're smiling, whether we're frowning. You know, there's an awful lot of semiotic information. And that example you just brought up is a perfect example. In politics, they don't realize, politicians, that they're demonstrating and communicating semiotically the contempt they have for us.
Mm-hmm.
Someone will ask them a question, what about this farm aid bill? And they'll say, I have insisted with the advent of COVID-19, and you want to say to them, I didn't ask you that.
Yeah.
Well, you're right. They're not listening.
Yeah.
And they don't feel they have to listen because, you know, anyway, so I sometimes will play some of these audio clips in my training course because they're extraordinary. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't think someone could get away with this much word salad, mumbo jumbo.
Can we talk about the semiotic thing on Zoom? Because so many of us are now communicating the way that you and I are communicating right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the nature of Zoom is, I mean, I try to have your photograph, your video feed mm-hmm. right below my webcam so that I'm looking at you and it looks like I'm looking at the video camera as the best to the best of my ability.
Well, we're going to change all that right now. We're going to take you up to another level.
All right.
And everyone listening can do the same thing. And once again, so simple, so easy. And I can't remember who taught me this. Usually I can remember exactly every single TV or movie person who taught me. Someone did, I can't remember, but I'll teach it to you right now. And I'm glad you bring it up, Candace, because it is a serious problem. You know, I'll talk about frequently in training that eye contact is absolutely mission critical. Mm-hmm. And because of technology, so many people spend their time texting, and that looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
They lose facial affect because they aren't using their face. They lose the ability to make eye contact. I have another collection I should send you when we're done with this. I have a collection of television commercials of actors, professional actors they've hired, who cannot maintain eye contact with the camera. And they're doing what I call micro avoidance movements that look like this, where they're sort of turning their head as they're talking. Yes, yes, exactly right. Exactly right. And they roll their eyes to break eye contact. Sometimes they close their eyes on camera. And this is very common. We all do this. And the reason is because that single cyclopean eye of the camera lens, we feel like we're being judged by it. And
Well,
psychologically, these micro avoidance movements, we're trying to escape. We're trying to get away from the judgmental eye. Now, if you practice anything, I said before, golf swing, tennis serve, cooking an omelet, whatever it is, if you practice, you get better and better.
Mm-hmm.
Some days
you get better and better, but some days like today, even though you are a professional podcaster who's been podcasting for 10 years, sometimes you have difficulty reading your teleprompter.
Well, of course we, you know, and you bring up another good point, Candace. Perfection is an ideal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it yeah. That's not something that I try to work with my clients on all the time. Perfectionism Absolutely. Is just an ideal and you have to release it.
Absolutely. That it is not achievable. It's not reality. And if you're laboring under that delusion, oh, I'm going to do this perfect, can't be done. No one can do anything. It's just an ideal that we aspire to. It gives us a target to aim at.
But you know what? I think perfection is, it's relative, right?
Sure.
So my husband and I went to the grocery store 2 days ago or 3 days ago because neither of us felt like cooking and we just wanted to grab dinner. So we grabbed a rotisserie chicken and some salads from the deli counter, right? And I grabbed the pistachio, this, I don't know what it's called, but it's pistachio jello with marshmallows and pineapple. And I love this dessert, but he doesn't like it at all. Okay. To me, this is like the perfect little dessert because it's light, it's fluffy, and it just reminds me of being a kid. And it doesn't appeal to him at all. So perfection, right, for me, it was the perfect dessert for that night for me. But he was like, I don't want any of that.
Well, you couldn't be more right, Candace. What you're describing is what makes life fantastic and filled with excitement. As my grandfather used to say, if everyone liked the same things, everyone would be after your grandma. And it's true, right? Mm-hmm. It's we all like different things. And so, of course, you're right. Mm-hmm. But back to your point, I want to teach this to your people and to you right now. Very simple way to
The topic was
that's okay.
Communicating on Zoom.
I haven't forgotten
semiotic communication on Zoom
is to be able to use Zoom better. And we're going to mm-hmm. start with eye contact. This is going to kill you because it's so simple. I want you to print out a photo of someone you have a good feeling about. Maybe it's a family member, a loved one. Maybe it's someone you've never met. Maybe it's a movie star or someone you have a crush on or you have good feelings about. Print out that picture, cut a hole where one of their eyes is, and put it on your laptop, your desktop, your phone.
What a great idea.
So that the camera lens is looking through that hole you cut in their eye.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Part of the problem we all have, of course, also with Zoom, is that it's not natural for us to be staring at this weird little light on our machines. Mm-hmm. But a face, that's programmed in our DNA.
Yeah. And if it's somebody that you have fond feelings for, it's calming.
It's so calm. You know,
it's such a good
I've read
idea.
Studies, anthropological studies, that the reason that babies have big eyes, little noses, and the way their features is because somehow genetically it causes parents to feel bonded to them. And you're right, of course. If it's someone we have a good feeling about, you put that over your camera lens. Now you're looking directly at the person. The person you're talking to, you may have a picture of Raquel Welch over your camera, and you're mm-hmm. talking to some grizzly old guy.
You just totally aged yourself.
Oh, of course.
Well, there are people listening to this going, who's Raquel Welch?
Well, what's funny about that is I shifted because I wasn't going to say who I use sometimes over my camera, but it's because I worked with her in Las Vegas was Anne Margaret.
Oh.
And she was so nice. She was so sweet. She was so down to earth.
Yeah.
She was unbelievable.
Yeah.
The younger people listening, don't go on the internet. You know, her whole image, of course, was very sex kitten kind of thing, mm-hmm. you know. But I'll tell you something really interesting. And I'll tell you something, I'm jumping around her a little bit.
I want to add to this whole thing about the photo, though.
Yes,
so hold that, put a pin in that thought for a second. So when I was going through radiation for breast cancer, you spend 20 to 25 minutes laying on a table and a machine is going around you, like it's circling around you, making clicking noises that kind of sound like kisses.
Mm.
Right. And you do this for 36 to 45, you know, some people do it for less, some people do it for more treatments. So for 18 hours of your life, you are laying underneath this table that's kissing you with its sounds. So I took a picture of George Clooney and I taped it to the machine.
Genius. Genius. So that
it was George Clooney kissing me.
Well, see, I already knew, Candace. I already knew that we were simpatico because you already are doing Wilson method training stuff. That's exactly it.
But it made it fun, and it made it fun for the technicians because, you know, it's uncomfortable being around people who are going. First of all, for those of you listening who've never known someone who's gone through radiation therapy or has never done it yourself, you're basically laying naked on a table where half a dozen people might be able to see you, right? Mm-hmm. So it's uncomfortable for everybody. And you mm-hmm. try to act mature, but it's still awkward and uncomfortable. And George Clooney just made it so much more pleasant.
Well,
for everybody.
An argument could be made that George Clooney makes everything better. Can't go wrong with that. You can't go wrong with that.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So I love that idea of putting a photo with a hole in the eye there on your camera.
If you do that for 2 weeks, you will suddenly find your eye contact with the camera on Zoom, on any kind of social media meetings, anything is so far improved.
But I want to be looking at you when you're talking. I don't want to be looking at the camera. right?
Right. Well, that's a little trickier. I think what you've set up for yourself is probably a very good arrangement. But again, it's like anything else. You have to practice. And, you know, there's some people who like to try and make one gigantic effort, not nearly as effective as a little bit.
Baby steps.
Consistently, day after day after day. That's what really carries the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I also try really hard not to take notes anymore during an interview. I found that when I was editing the replays that I was spending a lot of my time looking over here at this screen because I was taking notes. So now I just trust that AI is going to take my notes for me and it's going to do a good job.
There you go.
Of course. But I do. I mean, I do read the notes to make sure they're right and accurate, but well, I just let AI do it now.
Right. And that's, I think, a good use of AI, you know? Yeah. And for all of you who may be worried about AI displacing you, I think AI has some severe limitations.
Oh, yeah. It's not going to replace
you. I don't think there's all kinds of nuance involved in language. And, you know, we're talking about semiotic information being transmitted. I don't believe AI will ever be able to master that because it has a real human quality about it.
Yeah.
It may be able to mimic certain things, or someone may create a program they can input, but it still is only a simulacrum of being human. It will never, ever be able to take the place of humans who communicate at a high level. It certainly can replace humans who communicate at a poor level because there's not much going on there.
Yeah. Well, you know, animals have figured out how to communicate with humans and each other without words. I know exactly what my cat wants based on his very poor behavior. You know,
right? Of course.
If he's on top of the refrigerator, knocking everything on the floor, I know I've waited too long to feed him.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. I mean, you know, there and it's funny because so many of these things we take for granted, but you're giving really crystal clear example.
Yeah. Well, so the other day I listened to a podcast and it was talking about how researchers had filmed I think it was a gorilla, but it may be a chimpanzee. And I will have the link to the video in the show notes. They were sitting next to each other. One of them was the mother. One of them was the grown adult child, daughter. So it was two adult, I'm going to say gorillas for now, but I may be wrong. So two gorillas sitting next to each other, and one of them is looking at a leaf and then shows her mother the leaf. And then the mother looks at the leaf and then the daughter takes the leaf back. That's communicate. I mean, they are communicating with each other and sharing with each other. You know,
Absolutely.
Chimpanzees learn how to fish in anthills by mimicking each other.
Right. I mean, that was the first jump I was going to make, is that chimpanzees are tool users.
Mm-hmm. And so are otters.
So yes, there's actually a number of animals. I'm told even ravens use tools.
Mm-hmm.
And that means they must be communicating.
Yeah.
You know, I saw an incredible documentary about ravens, and they did some tests where they had a man wear a funny mask and he would go and scare some of them. And then they kept track of these ravens. I guess they had all kinds of cameras and stuff. And they found offspring of those ravens who had been scared by the guy with the mask. And the offspring were instantly frightened when they saw the guy wearing the mask. He hadn't done anything.
Wow.
But somehow that information is being...
It's being communicated. Yeah.
Being transmitted, you know?
In the same podcast episode, again, I'll link to it in the show notes, we talked about pigs. And so this makes me not want to eat pork anymore. But when two pigs are fighting with each other, a third pig will come and disrupt the fight and make them make peace with each other.
Well,
I mean, so... This whole nonverbal communication thing.
Yeah.
We just need to pay attention.
Well, you couldn't be more right that paying attention, and this brings us back, of course, to the idea of the first D of determining your goal. It's really about paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
People go into meetings, business meetings. They haven't thought, what am I trying to accomplish?
Yeah.
What's my goal? Maybe they go into a meeting with a boss, they want to ask for a raise, but they haven't really thought it out.
And how much do I want?
How much do I want? Mm-hmm. You know, do you know the actress Katie Sagal from Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Married with Children.
And on. That cartoon. She was in that cartoon too.
Futurama,
that's right.
Yeah, she plays the Cyclops. Katie's an old friend of mine. And I remember when she first got, I'll tell you something you don't know about her that most people don't know. She has an unbelievable singing voice.
Oh, I think I did know that.
Did you? I mean, it's not secret.
Yeah.
Most people don't know it about her. She sings R&B and just gorgeous, gorgeous, fantastic voice. I knew this because I knew her since we were teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when she got Married with Children, I was at a party at her house. I think it was a Christmas party in Beverly Glen in Los Angeles. I only remember where it was because there was no parking. You had to park like a mile away and walk down. But I remember I was talking with her and she was, the show had exploded and it was really a big moment for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, talking to her saying, this is so great. And she said, you know what, Larry, I made a big mistake. And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, I thought that because the show was so successful and things are going so well, they would offer me things to do with singing as well.
Mm.
And she said, they haven't.
Yeah.
And she said, I realize you have to ask for what you want.
Yes, absolutely.
I've never forgotten that. I've absolutely never forgotten that conversation with her because I thought, wow, that is so profound in its simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you just mentioned about someone going in for a race, but they don't think about how much they want.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that's going to go?
Yeah. You give 50 cents an hour. That's still a raise.
Absolutely.
That's not going to pay for more gas. It's barely going to cover the cost of lunch one for a week. Right.
Or worse, as happens sometimes in show business, they'll give you a better title. You don't actually get any more money, but now you're the executive VP in charge of whatever it is, you know.
This is what I know about money. If you just put it out there in the universe, I need a little bit more money. You may get a little bit more money, but it's going to be random and willy-nilly, and maybe you won't get anything at all. But if you specifically say, I need to raise $6,000 or I am raising $6,000 by June 25th, 2023, and it's going to cover the cost of X, mm-hmm. that money will arrive. You'll
Absolutely.
Get that money because you know what you need and you know what it's for.
Well, the process of clarifying your thinking and really being specific, like you say, in your goal,
mm-hmm.
it can achieve unbelievable results.
Yeah.
And it's funny, you know, I said, that's the first D is determining your goal. The second D is defining the means of transmission. Is it on a phone call? Is it in an email? Is it face-to-face? Is it on Zoom? You can see all of these use different techniques. And that's the third D is deploying the tools that you learn in Wilson Method. But our goal in all communication is always about clarity. That's what we always
want. Yeah, all of that is clarity.
Yeah, that's all we're trying to do.
You can't deploy until you know what you're deploying.
That's exactly right.
I'm a fan of the Ready, Fire, Aim method. With some things like, you know, with marketing, sometimes ready, fire, aim is where you have to go because you don't know which one's going to hit. So you have to throw a lot of darts to figure out which dart's the best dart.
Right.
And I've always been a ready, fire, aim kind of person.
Aren't being clear.
That's true. I know where the target is. See, I always talk about it in terms of archery because I've learned how to shoot a bow and arrow when I was four, right?
Oh.
So archery has always been part of my life, except for the last, you know, since I was an adult, not as much. But when you are shooting at the target, right, you only control what your arms do. You cannot control what the wind does. So you have to let go and see where the wind is going so that you can adjust your aim until you get it right. Now, some archers that have better instinct than me, an amateur, are better at it than others. But usually, you know, if you know how your bow goes and you can feel the wind blowing, mm-hmm. you know that you need to go down to the right, maybe up a little bit or whatever, so that the wind takes the arrow in the right direction. But until you shoot it, you don't know if you're right.
No, it's a perfect analogy. It's a perfect analogy. And I don't think there's anything wrong with the ready, aim, fire, because like you say, you know what your goal is. Your goal is we want to find out what works.
Yes.
And so although you're saying it's ready,
fire, aim,
ready, fire, aim. Really, I don't see it that
you
way.
You know what you're shooting at.
Exactly. You know what your target is, and you know what your goal is. Your goal is, we want to find out. So I may shoot a dozen arrows and then see which ones come closest to the target.
Mm-hmm.
So then we're just refining.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
But in all things, I think, in communication, we want clarity because we want to make it impossible for you to be misunderstood.
Mm.
And, yeah, you know, I was thinking this the other day. I heard a radio commercial. I think it was for a car wash. And someone was trying to explain why you should come to this car wash. And I could understand that someone sitting at their desk writing it was thinking, well, it doesn't matter if you have an expensive car or a hunk of junk. That's what they were thinking.
Yeah.
And so they said, the copy said, doesn't matter if you have a Yugo or McLaren F-150. And as I heard it, and this is what I was telling you before about my students complaining about being sensitized to this, I immediately thought, oh God, that's a terrible commercial. Because it works on paper, but not vocally coming to my ear. When I hear the words, doesn't matter if you have a Yugo, I hear the words, you go.
Yeah.
I don't know what the commercial's about. I think it's telling me I'm supposed to go someplace. By the time I realize, oh, they mean the car, a Yugo.
Yeah.
And then they say McLaren 150. It takes me a moment to sort of go, wait,
yeah, what's well, a McLaren 150?
Yeah, that's a very expensive.
Yeah.
Anything that interrupts the flow of communication makes us less effective.
Do you remember the Chevy Nova?
Sure.
So the Chevy Nova didn't sell well in Mexico because Nova means no go.
Oh, that's so funny. I didn't know that. But it makes perfect sense.
Uh-huh.
It makes perfect. That's so funny.
Uh-huh. Now we just dated me.
Well, but I'm making a note too because I like that so much.
Oh, yeah. Use that story in your teaching.
Well, no. I love that because it's perfect. And sometimes... You know, sometimes people in advertising or in marketing, they want to use clever wordplay, which is great.
Yeah.
If you say some clever wordplay that makes us understand your message, then we're more likely to remember it if it's clever. As long as we're dating ourselves here, Candace, do you remember about 1 million years BC?
No, I'm not that old.
I am. There was a billboard advertisement campaign for VW. Do you remember this?
Tell me what it is.
So clever. It was it looked like an Alka-Seltzer tablet, but it had the VW logo on it. And it was above a glass of water. So obviously the tablet's going to, it said, take two for gas pains.
Oh!
Right.
That's
and
funny.
They won all kinds of awards because it's so clever. Now, it doesn't work as well as an auditory experience, but seeing a billboard where you see this thing that looks like an Alka-Seltzer tablet, but it's got the VW, already it's strange. You sort of go, what's that? It says, take two for gas pains. You realize the play on word.
Yeah.
Instantly clear.
Yeah. I don't ever remember seeing that billboard.
Oh, that's funny.
But I do remember the Farfignugan ads.
Farfignugan.
I drove a Volkswagen Rabbit convertible. I bought it in 1989 and it was 9 years old already. It's a 1980 Volkswagen Rabbit convertible. Mm. I drove it until it was no longer drivable. And I was called the Farfignugan lady because that was about the time the Farfignugan commercials came out. Because, you know, I'm driving around. There is something about driving a convertible in a city, right? So it was inevitable. I'd have the top down. And every time I was driving through an area at a stoplight or something, someone would look and say, hey, there's nothing prettier than a woman in a convertible or something. People would always, you know, having a convertible when you're in your early 20s is really good for your self-esteem.
Well, it's fun. You know, if I had to guess, I would feel that semiotically, it transmits the message that you are open to the world, that you are not afraid.
Yeah, not afraid. Fearless. Fearless is a word that that is pretty good word to describe me. I mean, am I going to jump out of an airplane? No.
No.
Do I take chances? I do.
Sure.
I do.
And I bet that that's one of those things that a convertible communicates is, you know, when you're encased and you're protected from the world inside your car, it's one thing. But when there's no top on the car It's like, I'm not afraid. I'm open to the wind and the rain and the sun and everything.
Yeah. And it was fun to drive. It was perfect, Nugan.
I'm sure it was.
Oh, I keep telling myself I'll buy another convertible. We'll see. Well, it may happen. It may happen. Okay. So we've talked about the 3Ds. We've talked about semiotics. What else do you want to talk about? Oh, you know, I'd really love to get your take on communicating. Okay. So the audience listening to this are probably a solopreneur. They do their own marketing. They may even be, they may have a few employees, but mostly they're solopreneurs. Mm-hmm. So how can a solopreneur communicate their marketing message better, especially if they're doing some sort of networking or they're doing, you know, Zoom interactions or maybe even in a Zoom speed networking or Zoom networking? Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that.
Well, I would suggest there's something else I talk about in Wilson Method, which are 3 C's, and that is to connect, convey, and create. I want you to learn to connect before you've even spoken a word so that you can convey your message, whatever it may be, and create authentic bonds. Because I know, Candace, I'm reading from your hymn book now, because you could not be more right, that we have to connect with people in a real way. And this is where eye contact and facial affect comes into play, because then they're open to our message. So we can convey that message. And whether it's on Zoom, whether it's in person, whether it's a speed networking, whatever it may be, and create authentic bonds that last a lifetime. A very simple way, I find, is rather than trying to pitch people on things, is using, again, such a simple technique, but so powerful, is active listening. Many, many years ago, I was invited to a party at a big Hollywood celebrity. I'm not going to say who, we'll just say
you're so good at not dropping names.
Well, because there's certain people who I worked with, like Sammy Davis Jr., who was so sweet, who was so nice to me, who helped my career so much, who was a real friend. And I'd be in some weird city and the phone would ring and I'd pick it up and he'd say, "Hello, babe. Is this Mr. Wilson?" I go, "Mr. D, what's going on?" He goes, "I see that you're here in Minneapolis." And I'd say, "Are you in Minneapolis?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm at Sony." I go, "Well, how great." He goes, "What are you doing? You want to hang out?" Like, this is, so Sammy, you know, I never hesitate. I'll mention it. But sometimes when I don't mention other people's names, it's because I don't always feel maybe I have a permission to talk about them. This particular guy, very successful with the ladies. Let's put it that way.
Well, then maybe you shouldn't drop names.
Right. That's why, you know, but extremely, you know, reputation of very successful with ladies. And a girl I knew had invited me to come with her to this party. And when we got there, she said, "Oh, I want you to come meet him." I said, "You know what? I don't think he's interested in meeting me." And she said, no, he's great. You'll really." I said, "Okay." So she brings me up and goes, "Oh, this is Larry." And hi, how are you? And he says, Debbie tells me you just graduated from University of California. And I said, yeah. He said, "What was your major?" And I said, film and television production. And he says, do you like film noir? Now, I don't know if you know, Ken, film noir is a genre of film, you know? Mm-hmm. And I said, "I love film noir. It's fantastic." He said, "Do you like The Bad and the Beautiful?" And this, I said, "You mean the greatest film noir ever made?" I said, "Oh my God." I said, "Let me ask you something. Why were some of the women in that film, why did they become so famous and others, like Gloria Graham, why didn't she become a bigger star?" And he says, "Well, I think because all the femme fatales at the time were brunettes and she was blonde and her face was sort of hard." Next thing I know, he and I, in the middle of this gigantic party, are talking for like 40 minutes. There's a huge crowd around us of people who are looking at me like they'd like to strangle me. And I realized, oh God, I said, "You know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to monopolize your time." I said, "It's just so great talking." He said, no, I really liked meeting you. And
he really appreciated having that conversation with you. It was a real genuine conversation, not some fan fawning over him.
When I went away, I thought, no wonder this guy is so successful with the ladies. Mm. He could have been successful with me, for God's sakes. I was so charmed by him, and I realized it's because he was listening to me, and his responses showed that he actually heard me.
Yeah.
Now, this is the antithesis of what my childhood experience had been. Here I was with someone who really saw me and heard me. And it wasn't my opinion. I've told this story to sometimes in training with people, and somebody will say, well, you know, you just got lucky because, you know, what if he didn't know anything about film or film noir? I said, I think you're missing the point. This guy was a master communicator.
Yeah.
If he didn't know anything about film, he would have said, oh, you know what? I don't know anything about film. Tell me, what's the most exciting thing that you learned? Just because he's listening.
Yeah.
If you have solopreneurs, a portmanteau that I personally makes my hair on the back of my neck stand up when I hear it, but I think it's very effective, solopreneur, I get it. I would recommend them working on active listening.
That's great advice.
Because if you're dealing with people, rather than, you can always ask them questions, of course, but if you listen to them, they'll tell you volumes about what you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you simply talk to them about the things you've heard them saying, they'll think you're a genius.
Mm-hmm.
As a magician, I learned all kinds of amazing techniques for magic, for doing magic stuff.
Yeah.
And sometimes people ask me about certain mentalism things or mind reading things. And they sometimes will ask me about, fortune tellers and people like that. And I'll tell them that the majority of fortune tellers or palm readers are just really excellent listeners.
Yeah.
It's a very common technique to listen to the person whose palm you're reading and then repeat back to them what they just said.
Mm-hmm.
And frequently they'll say, this is incredible. How could you have known that? Well, how could I know it? You just said it.
It's like those people who say they communicate with the dead, and there's 1,000 people in the room, and they go, there's somebody in the room whose name starts with a D.
Right. Well, of course there is. Right. And then they say, I get the feeling that you didn't always have such a great relationship with this person. Well, who do you have that's never, there's some problem. And then if someone has had a bad relationship, of course they're going to seize on that. Yes, yes, that's right. But I'm getting a message now from beyond that they've forgiven you. Well,
that's
what they want to hear.
That's what they want to hear. Yeah.
If you listen. Now, also, I want to point out, I'm not encouraging any of your listeners to become spiritualists or fortune tellers. Except for amusement's sake only. You can do it for entertainment. But I will tell you this. One time, a couple of girls who worked for me in a show that I produced for Harrah's Casino at one point, and the show was over and they'd moved on to do other things and they'd left town. But they contacted me. They said, we got an offer to do a gig where they wanted a fortune teller. And so, of course, in show business, you always say yes. Oh, can you juggle fire? Oh, yes, yes, of course. Oh, tame lions? Oh, yes, yes, of course. We always say yes. Right? So they were calling me to say, how do we do this? And I just said to them, I said, listen to them and repeat back what they said. And both girls, it was funny. It was for a grad night party where they want to keep kids from going out drinking and stuff. So they wanted to keep them in some controlled environment.
Yeah.
And the girls were supposed to work from midnight till 2 a.m. They called me the next day. They said they were such a huge success that they paid them to stay longer.
I love it.
Because everyone wanted their fortune told and people were raving about how accurate they were.
That's excellent.
I'm telling you.
That is excellent.
It's really a simple thing to do. And any solopreneur can do this. And if you combine some of these things, If you combine making eye contact and using facial affect, let your face reflect some of what's going on with you. Mm-hmm. We don't want to conceal all this information. If someone says something that delights you, laugh out loud. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's much better than texting LOL.
Yeah, it's very entertaining. And when you laugh, somebody else might laugh and you start this chain reaction and then you have no idea why you're laughing. It's a wonderful thing.
It's
a wonderful thing. When I do speed networking, which is usually, I mean, for those of you who've never speed networked before, listener, it's 6 minutes with someone you may have never met before. 3 minutes they talk, 3 minutes you talk, right? I try not to talk at all. I try to spend the entire 6 minutes asking Larry more questions about Larry.
Absolutely.
And then when the conversation is over, Larry thinks I'm the most interesting person he's ever met.
Absolutely. And they're likely not to forget you.
Exactly.
Because it's not that common that people are listening to you.
The pink hair kind of is unforgettable too.
Well, yeah, I guess. But if it was pink hair with you just talking a mile a minute, I bet.
Oh, it would have so that. Annoying. Yeah. I try to be very clear. When people talk about how do you stand out, I'm like, I wear a pink wig because I don't have any hair. I went through chemo treatment twice, right? So it never came back. So I don't have any hair. So I have fun with the wigs, right? And so why not wear a pink wig or a red wig or a blue wig or a purple wig, whatever color I feel like being that day. But just because it works for me doesn't mean it's going to work for you. Like there was a really popular marketing guru who had a streak of color in her hair. And, you know, that was like her signature color. And I noticed after that a lot of other coaches started putting streaks of color in their hair. And I was thinking to myself, you're stealing her identity, right? Just because she does it and it works for her doesn't mean it's going to work for you. You got to find your own thing.
Well, Candace, you've brought up something really interesting here. And I don't think you meant to.
But how do you know I didn't mean to?
Well, we'll see. I want to point it out to your audience, though, because it's very powerful. When Candace says to you she wears a wig because her hair didn't come back after chemotherapy, that's very self-effacing. It's Candace presenting herself as a real person and sharing stuff that somebody else might be uncomfortable. And you're going to be surprised, Candace, that I bring this back to Anne Margaret. But I'll tell you why I think you're successful. I think it is that act of being self-effacing. When I worked with Anne Margaret, she was a gorgeous woman and everyone, she's world famous. And many people had known a few years before I worked with her, she'd had a terrible accident on stage in Lake Tahoe. She'd fallen during a show 15 feet onto the stage on her face.
Ouch.
And her entire face all broken up. They airlifted her life flight to LA and they had to reassemble her face like a jigsaw puzzle. And her makeup artist had created some makeup to try and compensate for this. But one night during the run when I was with her, one of the people came and said, oh, you know, there's going to be a party upstairs in the suite and they wanted to make sure you knew and you were invited. I said, oh, thanks very much. And then between shows, her husband, Roger Smith, who was also so nice, came and said, Larry, you know, we're having a party up in the suite after the show, and we wanted to make sure you were invited. I said, oh, thank you. I said, yeah, someone told me. He said, well, we just want to make sure that you knew you were invited. We really hope you'll be there. I said, of course. Then after the second show, there's a knock at the door. I open the door. There's Anne Margaret, her hair up in a towel, sweatshirt and jeans, face completely scrubbed clean. And there's a hideous scar running from the top of her forehead down through the bridge of her nose, through this eye socket down here. Horrible, horrible scar. But when I saw that, and why is she there? She says, oh, we just want to make sure that you're coming up to the party. Everyone wanted to. I said, yes. I said, you're not supposed to be doing this. You're the big star. Get out of here. She said, no. We just want to make sure you were invited. I said, yes. Everyone's been so nice. Thank you. From that moment on, I would lay my life down for that woman. The fact that she would present herself in front of me without any artifice, so self-effacing, it captured my heart.
Yeah.
The same when you say, I'm wearing a wig because my hair didn't come back from chemotherapy. You connect with people in such a powerful way. Now, I'm not saying that your listeners should invent some sort of tragedy. I don't mean that. But you can be self-effacing if you got a bad haircut, or if somebody washed your clothes, or you washed your clothes and they bled with some other color. If you go, look at this. This is why I shouldn't be trusted to do the laundry. You know, when you present yourself honestly, openly,
yeah,
it makes you impossible to resist.
Yeah.
It makes you someone who others want to invest in personally, mm-hmm. professionally, mm-hmm. emotionally.
Yeah.
That's what we're looking for in this life.
I have a friend who's a health coach, and she has Bell's palsy, which means that her, you know, side of her face doesn't work sometimes. And she posted to Facebook, she goes, I have Bell's palsy and I own that shit. And I think that it had 5,000 likes. I mean, that's an exaggeration, but you know what? She has it. She knows she has it. She doesn't try to hide it. She owns it.
And
that's exactly what self-effacing means. That yeah. you all warts and all, you own it.
It's in a strange, paradoxical way, it makes you more powerful.
Yeah.
If you share that.
Yeah. It really makes you, it's endearing. The more, you know, I already loved her because she's a friend, but I love her more now.
Of
right.
course. Right. Absolutely guaranteed.
Yeah. All right. I cannot believe this. We need to wrap. I feel like I could talk to you for another 6 hours, but we do need to wrap up. So we've talked about it, but I would just like for you to clarify, what's your favorite marketing tool, tip, or technique?
I missed one word there. You dropped out for a second. My favorite marketing
tool, tip, or technique?
Oh, tool, tip, or technique. I obviously have a bias. I feel that my favorite marketing technique, and I should point out, I'm not a marketing expert. So
you're a communication expert, and marketing is communication.
Yes. Yes, it is. But I don't want to take anything away from people who are really experts in marketing and know things that are way beyond my understanding.
But you do market the business that you own.
Yes. Absolutely right. I always feel that live communication is the strongest, that face-to-face will never replace clicking from place to place. And it's difficult sometimes. Sometimes people don't have time or they're uncomfortable being on camera. Mm-hmm. Or I obviously, of course, prefer if I can meet someone live, face-to-face. Mm-hmm. Candace and I are on opposite sides of the country, so this is the most expedient way we can achieve this. Mm-hmm. But I think my favorite of all marketing things is to arrange whatever it takes to get face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because there's all this semiotic information being exchanged, and all you have to do is ground yourself and be open and positive. You don't have to say anything about it. You have to just feel it. And it's coming off you in waves.
Yeah.
I'm sure all of your listeners have met someone or have heard about someone who they said, oh, when that person steps in the room, everybody turns to see them.
Just lights up the room when they enter it. Yeah.
Right. You can be that person.
Anybody can.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep. You know, since the invention of video conferencing, you know, Zoom, Skype, all the things that came before, I do not like talking on the phone at all because I don't like talking to a voice. I want to mm-hmm. see you when I'm talking to you.
Me too.
Like if somebody calls me, I'm like, can we get on Zoom? I do not want an iPhone. Because I'm anti iPhone, but I'm this close because iPhone has FaceTime, you know?
Well, you know, I have to tell you, I'm not an iPhone man myself. I have a Droid, and there's some video feature on it because I know.
Google Duo.
No, I don't think
something
so.
Else? It's not Google Duo?
I'm not a big tech master, so if I'm able to do it, it's usually something that's really entry level. My wife and I know.
Oh, you know, if you have T-Mobile has the ability for you to have to video conference with somebody else that also has a T-Mobile phone.
Oh, I wonder if that's it.
So if you're both, or it could be, you know, a different, but my husband and I, when he had an Android, we could video each other, but our daughter, we could not video with our daughter because she had an iPhone.
Oh, I see. Well, yeah, it may be, but I'm with you. I mean, I would much prefer, again, just because so much information is being exchanged semiotically.
Yeah.
I want that opportunity. Although I have to tell you, Candace, you know, in this day and age, sometimes even getting someone on the phone is difficult, you know?
It is. I don't know where my phone is right now, but I don't normally have it on me.
That's funny. During this, during our interview here, my wife called me. I just saw the phone, so I turned it over to stop it from ringing. But I forgot to tell her I was doing this thing with you. So
I'm sure she has something lovely to tell you. All right, we need to wrap up. Like I said, I could talk to you for hours more, and I'm really disappointed that this is the end of our conversation, but it is. So it's time.
Do it again.
Yes, we'll have to have you back. So it's time for your moment. It's time for your moment of gratitude. For whom or what are you most grateful?
Well, I guess I would have to say I'm most grateful for my wife. I've had a fantastic life with all kinds of ups and downs, like everyone has. But like I mentioned at the beginning of this, so many things I fall into, I don't know what I'm doing. I met this woman completely by accident and had no interest in her at all. And especially I had no interest because she had a dog, and I'm allergic to dogs and cats. I'm allergic to their fur. But I started sort of hanging out with her, and I fell in love with this dog she had. I couldn't believe it. I fell in love with this dog. And then I started to realize the reason the dog was sort of the way she was because of this woman. And I mean, it just goes to show that I'm not a genius. It took me quite a while to put all these pieces together. But then I realized, oh, this something here might really work out. And I spent more time with her. And then several years had gone by. And I thought, well, this is really great. Obviously, you know, it won't last. But you know, for now, it's pretty good. And then I guess maybe 7-8 years had gone by, and we found she was pregnant, and we had a son. And I never thought about that. I never expected that. And it was fantastic. And this boy has been like the apple of our eye. And we have like this family now with a father and a mother and a child. And it's the greatest ever. I can only tell you, Candace, when I hear sometimes people talk about, oh, something in the past, those were the best days of my life. I can't believe it, because I think, are you kidding? Every day I wake up is the best day of my life. I look at what I've got, this woman and this boy, I think it can't get any better. And then the next day it does. And I credit her with all of that.
Thanks for tuning in to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building lasting, genuine relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. Make sure to visit gratitudegeek.com for the show notes, where you can find links to all the groovy resources we've mentioned, including ways to connect with our guest, Larry Wilson. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on Audible, iTunes, Good Pods, or your preferred podcast player so you never miss an episode. Our theme music is track 14 by Rev Brock and Solely. I'm your host, Candace Rodarte, reminding you that gratitude is like manure. It's just a pile of poo until you spread it around. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay groovy, my friends.
I know we can make it easier than they can. We can make it better than before.